little change of pace from what we've been doing the last couple of days. Going back to Virat Rupa. From Lord Nisringadev to Virat Rupa. Give me a whiplash. So, Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. In chapter 5 of Canto 3, Vidura has asked a whole series of questions about the personality of Godhead, and as he, Maitreya, has understood the personality of Godhead from the personality of Godhead, from Krishna, but his questions are specific to his relationship, the absolute truth, the Chatushloki verses that are describing the essence of the whole Bhagavatam, Paramam Stitim, if you remember that phrase, the relationship, the loving exchange between the personality of Godhead and his devotees in Vrindavan and Dwarka, and the relationship between the personality of Godhead and those that are rebellious, that land in Maya, in the material creation. So on the relationship side, there's a very complex arrangement that's made for the living entities that are rebellious, the purpose of which is, from the Lord's side, to give them another chance to restore their proper consciousness, to become happy once again. That's his purpose. And then there are other things that happen in between. So for that to happen, in the cycle of time, we discussed a little bit about time, if you recall, and time, the Vedic picture of time as it moves, cyclical. There's smaller cycles and then larger cycles and bigger cycles, and the cycles get to be so big it looks like it's eternal, but it's not. It's still illusory time or relative time. Illusory in the sense that time creates illusory appearances of things. Now you see it, now you don't, kinds of things. Pulling the rabbit out of the hat kinds of things. Maybe that means something to me. That there's a... magicians will sometimes do this. They take a hat, like a big formal hat, pull it inside and outside. There's no rabbit. They put their hand inside, give it to somebody. Do you see any rabbit? There's no rabbit. Then they reach inside and they pull out a rabbit. And everybody goes, wow, that was cool. And then he puts the rabbit back in the hat. The rabbit's gone. So, as the magician pulls rabbits out of hats, the personality of Godhead is taking the unmanifest state and bringing it into the manifest state for a purpose, for giving the living entities an out of love. Giving living entities an opportunity to regain their original consciousness, restore their loving relationship with the personality of Godhead. So for that to happen, that's the purpose, he does a number of things. He glances over the pradhan, the sum total of the material elements, and from that pradhan, by the entrance of the Lord in the form of time and the living entities and his powerful glance, the mahatattva arises, or it's the transformed state of the unmanifest state. It's a big warehouse that's all jumbled up and not separated out, and then things start separating out. and the elements mentioned. There's 24 elements in Sankhya philosophy. Mentioned are 23. Intelligence is what's not mentioned. In any case, there's 23 elements. And also the controlling agents of those elements. The demigods. Now, we mentioned that's in the Visarga. That's what Brahma does, but it's just spanning over time, big periods of time to even... What Brahma does is also empowered by the personality of Godhead. So we can't put up a firewall and say, okay, this is what Vishnu does, and then there's a firewall, and then this is what Brahma does separate from what Vishnu does. Because what Brahma does is dependent upon empowerment from Lord Vishnu. So demigods are produced, and then at the end of chapter 5, they're offering prayers to the Supreme Lord. We don't feel capable. We don't feel the strength. We don't have sufficient intelligence to know how to do what we're supposed to do. So please empower us. And so chapter 6 of Canto 3 begins with the Lord hearing their prayer. He then enters into the elements. It's not like, you know, there's a big pile of earth over here and there's a big pile of water over there and big pile of fire over there. Not quite like that. But he enters into the elements as Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. And then the Virat Rupa emerges or arises or manifests. We heard something about the whole chapter is the creation of the universal form. So that's this very puzzling topic. Can we move forward? It's our ritual. Please move forward. One more time. Yeah. Very good. And in the back there, please move forward, because people will come in behind you, and then we'll have room. Thank you, thank you. So the Virat Rupa arises. I'll just read the last verse that we covered. As the Lord in his plenary portion entered into the elements of the universal creation, they, that's the elements, transformed into the gigantic form, that's the Virat Rupa, in which all the planetary systems and all movable and immovable creations rest. So it's something like a skeleton, or it's something like a blueprint, or it's something like a subtle manifestation upon which the upper planets, the middle planets, the lower planets, and all the various everything that makes up the universe, the everything, the forms of life, the varnas and ashrams, and everything is suspended by or resting in the Virat. But the universe isn't manifest yet. It's still, there's elements, and it hasn't been put together yet. Because the Virat is needed for the demigods to know, okay, where does everything go, and how do we do what we're supposed to do, and where do we get the strength to do it. The last sentence of that purport: the universal form is called the Virat Rupa because the Supreme Lord is within it in his plenary portion. So as it's subtle. Something like as there's a soul that's animating the covering, the body, so similarly but not exactly, it's not 100% the same, the universal Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, entering into the elements manifests this subtle material Virat Rupa. And consciousness permeates the Virat Rupa because of the presence of Paramatma, or excuse me, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and in turn Paramatma expanding within every atom. So consciousness is there, but consciousness is there because of the presence of the Supreme Consciousness. Just like consciousness is there in this body because of the presence of the soul. And when the soul leaves, there's no consciousness. There's no appearance of consciousness within the body. It's not exactly like that. It's not the one-to-one correlation because, as you're going to hear about Hiranmaya, universal form and Garbhodakshayi Vishnu are equivalent, almost. You have to be subtle in your consciousness to pick up on this. If you get your college intelligence going, you'll spin out. So don't do that. But it is scientific. And I'll just step back and before I launch into these verses, there it's technical. But Sariputta Prabhu shared something with me at one point some years ago. He was making visits to colleges and promoting BI work, Life Comes From Life, and other things that were part of his work. And he said one of the things that really made it difficult, besides the strong investment, blind faith that people have in modern science, and if it, whatever you say matches modern science, then it's thumbs up, and if it doesn't match modern science, boo. So the Christian creationists had, around that time previously, been making a campaign around campuses, and the literalists from Genesis that say, where it says, God said, let there be such and such, and so it was, and it all happened in 7 days. And then he rested, like he was tired or something. The scientists would challenge, where's the evidence for something like this? And, you know, it's their faith only. There's not scientific in the sense that you can replicate it again and again. You know, the scientific method of, okay, you have your theory or thesis or idea, you perform an experiment, you get some observations and reach conclusions. Like, and you can replicate it again and again. Doesn't matter who does it. You have to have certain conditions, but when the conditions are met, you can replicate it again and again. So we can say to the scientist, okay, you say life comes from matter, here's the matter. Can you create life? And they can't. How is it scientific? There was an event, some convention in California that Sarup Damodar Maharaj had attended as a PhD scientist, and a chemical evolutionist man, scientist, was promoting his recent writing on chemical evolution, and he finished the whole thing, and Dr. Singh, Shrup Damodar Maharaj, said, if you were to supply the elements, can you create life? Because that's what you've been speaking about, so can you do it? Can you go to your lab and do it? And the answer was no. So, you know, he just poked a big hole in his whole bubble. And all the air went out. So as they may say to the religionist, can you replicate this? Is there some scientific evidence for it? And if not, it pokes an air in their theory, pokes a hole in their theory. The Vedic, this is just a preamble, one of the values of what this is if someone was a very, very qualified scientist, they can literally verify the cause and effect that's being described. Now, we don't have the potency of the personality of Godhead to enter into the elements and bring rise to Virat Rupa. But there's a phrase in science, non-falsifiability. You've heard that one? Or falsifiability. A theory stands as long as there isn't some empiric evidence that says it can't be because. And they threw that one out. Now it's another test or standard. But falsifiability was a standard. In any case, the rather than saying God said, let there be light, and there was, there's a Sankhya goes into detail, and the God said, let there be light, here's how it happened. Ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And it's technical. And those whose minds are not technical go to sleep. And let's get to the stories, please. But the merit, the part of the value of what we're doing is it's scientific. It's the cause and effect. We'll hear, it's technical, but how to create a being, or how to have good health, or what's the cause of ill health? Why does the machine start to break down? Because the cause and effect is not in order. So you have to go back to the machine, the workings of the machine, not just, you know, give a drug that diminishes the symptom as an allopathy. It's Ayurveda is based on these same elements or principles of Sankhya, the push and the pull, and it goes right to the root cause and adjusts from the, you know, the cause to the effect, not cover up the effect. Okay, so back to the universal form. Hiranmaya sa purusha. Hiranmaya, in the word for word, because it's going to mention Hiranmaya several times with a capital H. The Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who also assumes the Virat Rupa. He's the soul of the universe and he's the universe. But the universe is temporarily manifest, so the Virat Rupa is temporarily manifest. And so, it's not an eternal form. Whereas, the form of the Lord is eternal. Fully spiritual. But for the purpose of creation, this kind is generated. Virat Rup. By Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And how that happens is being presented. And why it happens is being presented. So, what we're going to hear is during this unmanifest state, there's 1,000 celestial years, and that's a long time. Just to quick, Prabhupada would speak about this often. One day there is 6 months here. One night is another 6 months. That means 1 year is 1 day. 1 year is 1 day. Times 30 times 12 times 1,000. For that period of time, 1,000 celestial years, the Virat Rupa, known as Hiranmaya, lived for 1,000 celestial years on the water of the universe. What's the water of the universe? It's not, you know, what you go and get out of the faucet. It's not that. It's Garbhadakshay Vishnu. He laid down in the, expanded himself into the universe. From his body, he generated Garbhadak water, and that produced the Garbhadak ocean, which filled half the universe. So as Garbhadakshay Vishnu lay reclining in the Garbhadak ocean, which takes up half of the universe that hasn't been created yet. Now, where's the ocean bottom for the Garbhadak ocean? The answer is there isn't one. Doesn't need. It's just suspended, or it's existing on the strength of Garbhadakshay Vishnu creating it. And similarly, by his energy, it's supported. That's all. That's a very different kind of an ocean, where there's no earth bottom. Different kind of an ocean. So he's resting within the Garbhadak ocean, and the Virat Rupa, which is going to be the universe, but it's, that has yet to be manifest, is also existing. And all the living entities lay with him, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Hiranmaya, the universal form, Virat Rupa. Purport. After the Lord entered each and every universe as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and remember, it's not a universe that hasn't been put together yet. It's subtly existing. Anyway, half of the universe was filled with water. The cosmic manifestations of the planetary systems, outer space, etc., which are visible to us, is only half of the complete universe. Before the manifestation takes place, and after the entrance of Vishnu within the universe, there's a period of 1,000 celestial years. All the living entities injected within the womb of the Mahatattva are divided in all the universes with the incarnation of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and all of them lie down with the Lord until Brahma is born. Brahma is the first living entity within the universe, and from him all other demigods and living creatures are born. Manu is the original father of mankind, and therefore in Sanskrit, mankind is called Manushya. Humanity, in different bodily qualities, is distributed throughout the various planetary systems. So sometimes it's asked, 400,000 human forms, where are they? Here's one answer. One thing is they're throughout the planetary systems. It's not just here. Then another answer to that is, Prabhupada didn't, that I know of, give a detailed, definitive answer to the question, what are the 400,000? Can you give some examples? Just these two things that I'm mentioning now. Here, mankind is distributed throughout the planetary systems. And another is that the verse from the second canto, Bhagavatam, that describes Hunandra, Palinda, Pulkasha, Abhira, etc., etc. So there are different divisions of humans, human form, according to their characteristics, even on this planet. So, next, to get help fill in the picture here, There's mention of two things, mention of the one and the ten and the three. The one is consciousness, the ten is the different kinds of life airs, ten. And the three corresponds with the modes of nature, but it also corresponds with adiatmic, adidaivic, adibautic, that correspond with the body, the mind, and the demigods. So, you know, you have to listen carefully because Prabhupada doesn't make this, you know, high schoolish. There's a bucket over here, and here's what this bucket looks like. There's a bucket over here, and here's what that bucket looks like, and then there's another one, and that's what's in that bucket. He doesn't do it like that. Sukadeva Goswami, Maitreya doesn't do like that. I've never seen it. But there are pieces of information, and you just have to listen carefully. Text 7. The total energy of the Mahatattva, in the form of the gigantic Viratrupa, divided himself by himself, meaning he didn't take any outside strength. He did it himself by himself into the consciousness of the living entities, the life activity, the life of activity, that's life air, consciousness, life air, and self-identification, which are subdivided into 1, 10, and 3. Consciousness, life air, and adiatmika, adibautika, adidaivika. Something is mentioned here and it's going to be mentioned again. Purport to text 7. Consciousness is the sign of the living entity or the soul. We've heard that one before. Symptom of the soul. The existence of the soul is manifest in the form of consciousness. Just saying the same thing in reverse. Called Jnana Shakti. I've never heard it identified like that, other than this. But here it is. Jnana Shakti. The capacity of the living entity to know. Whatever the living entity can know. The total consciousness is that of the gigantic Viratrupa, and the same consciousness is exhibited in individual persons. So individual persons can't be universally conscious. They can be conscious of the supreme soul of the universe, and the supreme soul of the universe is supremely conscious and can impart knowledge and forgetfulness and remembrance. But our capacity is from the Supreme. Our capacity to know things is dependent. Although innately we're conscious beings. The activity of consciousness is performed through the air of life. So consciousness, that's the one. And then there's the ten. Consciousness is performed through the air of life. That was the previous condition where the living entities were in a dormant state of consciousness. They weren't exhibiting consciousness. But now they're going to exhibit consciousness, so they need the air of life. So the Lord makes that arrangement. Continuing in the purport, Prabhupada lists the ten kinds of life airs. Later he's going to state what each of the ten is and what they do. But for this purpose, the consciousness of the soul becomes polluted by the material atmosphere, and thus various activities are exhibited in the false ego of bodily identification. False ego has already been mentioned as it's separated out first from the undifferentiated then Mahatattva, then ta-da, false ego. So false ego of bodily identification helps create bodies. Consciousness drives the machine. And time is making the arrangement that in due sequence everything is assembled nicely. And the demigods are assisting Lord Brahma in the whole program. These various activities are described in Bhagavad Gita 2.41 as Bahushakha Yanantascha Buddhayo Vyavasayinam. Second chapter. The conditioned soul is bewildered into various activities for want of pure consciousness. In pure consciousness, the activity is one, because consciousness is pure. But if consciousness is not pure, then activity is diverse. Bahushaka. Curious sentence. The consciousness of the individual soul becomes one with the supreme consciousness when there is complete synthesis between the two. Should I read that one again? The consciousness of the individual soul becomes one with the supreme consciousness when there is complete synthesis between the two. Bhakti yoga. Vyavasayatmika buddhi. The consciousness of the individual soul is given by the supreme soul for the purpose of coming to him. So the consciousness, they're in full agreement. Consciousness is given by this one who the individual soul is trying to go to. It's a perfect GPS system. Flawless. Never tells you to go the wrong street. The ones that I've seen, they tell you sometimes. Take an exit. And then they laugh. Anyway, so in the next paragraph, Prabhupada expands on that sentence I just read. The difference between monism and Vaishnavism. Monism has a different sense of becoming one. The Vaishnava has a different sense of becoming one. The one consciousness. The one consciousness is oneness of interest. The supreme is to be served. And I, the tiny, want to serve the supreme. So there's one interest. Although consciousness is individual, there's collective individuals, and collectively, it's not you add them all up and then you get the supreme consciousness. But the consciousness is one in harmony, or it's Prabhupada's phrase is unity in diversity. It's very deep. I'll read it. We know what the monists say. I'll read it. The monists believe that there is only one consciousness, whereas the sattvatas, or the devotees, that sattvata, those who are pure in consciousness, believe that there is undoubtedly one consciousness. They are one because there is agreement. The individual consciousness is advised to dovetail with the supreme consciousness as instructed by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. The individual consciousness, Arjuna, is advised to dovetail with the supreme consciousness, Krishna, and thus maintain his conscious purity. It is foolish to try to stop the activities of consciousness, because they can be purified when they are dovetailed with the Supreme. This consciousness is divided into three modes of self-identification according to the proportion of purity. Adhyatmika, identification with the body or mind. Adhibhautika, self-identification with the material products. And Adhidaivaka, or self-identification as a servant of the Lord, lower to higher. Gradations of purity. Of the three, Adhidaivaka, self-identification, is the beginning of purity of consciousness in the pursuance of the desire of the Lord. Now we hear these Adi Atma, Adi Bhauta, Adi Daiva terms used in different ways. They're one place that we're all very familiar with is sufferings. They're used in a slightly different but similar way in Bhagavad Gita. Here they're used in a slightly different but similar way, but Adi Atma, body and mind, sufferings, the kleshas, Adi Bhauta, other living entities, and Adi Daiva, here it's other living entities is the sufferings, and this is paraphernalia. So there's the body, and with the body the senses, chief of which is the mind. That's the direct covering of the soul. There's other objects that are material products, self-identification with the material products of ignorance, passion, the fruits of our work, material products, and Adhidaiva. Identification with oneself as the servant of the Lord, and there are those who are serving the Lord and controlling these other things, the demigods, Daiva, ignorance, passion, goodness, and proportionate to the influences of those three things, we find more or less pure consciousness. And the Adhidaiva, it's the platform from which pure consciousness or Krishna consciousness can be cultivated. So we don't have the creation yet. There's this 1,000 celestial years period where, it's like gestation period. And the elements are there, the universal form is there, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is there, and Brahma hasn't appeared yet. So that means the other entities have not appeared yet. That which, fills out the universe. Text 8. The gigantic universal form of the Supreme Lord is the first incarnation and plenary portion of the Supersoul. So the Vishnu Tattvas, and one of the things they produce is this, the Virat Rup. He is the capital L self of the unlimited number of living entities, and that refers to the bodies, not the souls. And in him rests the aggregate creation. Aggregate. Prabhupada uses that word aggregate in Bhagavad Gita, the aggregate. It's in chapter 13, text 6 through 8, where again it's Sankhya that's presented, and there's the various elements, 24, their interactions, and then the aggregate. Aggregate's like the big warehouse, sum total of everything. Come sit. He is the self of an unlimited number of living entities, and in him rests the aggregate creation, which thus flourishes. flourishes in due course of time. The time energy is still operative here. It's just not time yet that it comes, but it will in 1,000 celestial years' time. The wheel of existence is turning, powered by time. Time is fascinating. So, purport, the Supreme Lord expands himself in two ways. Personal expansions, separated minute expansions. The personal plenary expansions are Vishnu Tattva, and the separated expansions are the living entities. Since the living entities are very small, they are sometimes described as the marginal energy of the Lord. But the mystic yogis consider the living entities and the supersoul Paramatma to be one and the same. Listen to this. It is, however, a minor point of controversy. Semicolon. After all, everything rests on the giant Virat, or universal form of the Lord. I don't exactly understand what he wishes us to receive from that statement. The first part is the mystics, they're very elevated in meditation process. They derive powers that are subtle material powers from Supersoul. From Supersoul, they can do things that the rest of us can't do, at least in the way that they can do it. We can do, Prabhupada gives this example in the Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion. The siddhis, the mystic perfections of the yogis, are but material things. Fly in the air so they can fly in the air. But we can do with a machine. We fly in the air. And so forth, all of them. They can create. We do with machines and they do subtly. It's just subtle manipulation of laws of nature. The intelligence for that is given to them by Supersoul. The power to do that is given to them by Supersoul. And people go, wow, look at that, he just created gold. Or Prapti City, obtained something from a distant place, etc. So the mystics have this capacity to connect with Paramatma, and some of them, it's stated elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, they identify. It's silly, but they identify, that's me. See, Super Soul, that's me. But there's the object seen and there's the seer, so how can it be me? But they identify like that. Some identify like that. And Prabhupada very uncharacteristically says, but that's a minor controversy. After all, everything is situated on the universal form. So even the yogis who think like that, they're situated on the universal form. Going back to, you know, there's one consciousness in this universal form. So that's just a subset of everything. Minor controversy. Normally we don't hear Prabhupada speaking like that. Now, the last, I've included this text 9 because it again speaks about the 1, the 3, and the 10, and Adiatmaka, Adidaivaka, Adibhautika. So it helps put it together. So I'm going to read it. Text 9. The gigantic universal form is represented by 3, 10, and 1 in the sense that he, gigantic universal form, is the body and the mind and the senses. So that's the Adiatmaka. He is the dynamic force for all movements by 10 kinds of life energy, Adibhautika. And he is the one heart where life energy is generated. Check it out. Here's the purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7, 4 and 5, it is stated that the eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego, are all products of the Lord's inferior energy. Whereas living entities who are seen to utilize the inferior energy originally belong to the superior energy, the internal potency of the Lord. So that's fine. The eight inferior energies work grossly and subtly, whereas the superior energy works as the central generating force. This is experienced in the human body. The gross elements, earth, etc., form the external gross body and are like a coat, whereas the subtle mind and false ego act like the inner clothing of the body. End of paragraph. So all that's easy. Bhagavad Gita, we're very familiar with all that. Now it gets into the Bhagavatam. A little more complex. The movements of the body are first generated from the heart, and all the activities of the body are made possible by the senses, powered by the ten kinds of air within the body. Of course, none of that can do anything without the soul. And the soul can't do any of it without the super soul. So, it's not a complete statement, but it's a correct statement. The ten kinds of air power the senses and the movements of the body. You can't blink your eyelid, or you can't digest your food, or you can't. Bodies don't function. They don't function properly, but they don't even function without the life air. So here's the 10 kinds of life air. And after listing these 10, he's going to go back and say they're generated from the heart. So as you're hearing this list, you can bear that in mind. Because the sentence at the head of this paragraph, the movements of the body are first generated from the heart. That is to say, the airs are generated from the heart, and the airs make the movements of the body. Without the movements of the body, without the airs moving, the body doesn't move. Like paralysis or something. Because the air circulation isn't working right. Okay, here's the ten. The main air passing through the nose in breathing is called prana. The air which passes through the rectum as evacuated bodily air is called apana. The air which adjusts the foodstuff within the stomach and which sometimes sounds as belching is called samana. The air which passes through the throat and the stoppage of which constitutes suffocation is called udana. And the total air which circulates throughout the entire body is called vyana air. That's five. Subtler than these five airs, there are others also. That which facilitates the opening of the eyes, mouth, etc. is called naga air. The air which increases appetite is called krikkara air. The air which helps contraction is called kurma air. The air which helps relaxation by opening the mouth wide, parentheses, in yawning, is called Devadatta. You can remember that one from Nectar of Devotion. Devadatta. And the air which helps sustenance is called Dhananjaya air. Paragraph. All these airs are generated from the center of the heart, which is one only. This central energy is superior energy of the Lord, who is situated within the heart of, with the soul of the body, which acts under the guidance of the Lord. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 15:15 as follows: Sarvasya Chaharmadi Sannivishto, etc. The complete central force is generated from the heart by the Lord, who is seated there and who helps the conditioned soul in remembering and forgetting and everything else-ing. Whatever we do. Yawn. Belch. He generates the airs that permit those things, and he regulates them so that we can do the things or not do those things. The conditioned state is due to the soul's forgetfulness of his relationship of subordination to the Lord. One who wants to continue to forget the Lord is helped by the Lord to forget him birth after birth. But one who remembers him by dint of association with a devotee of the Lord is helped to remember him more and more. Thus, the conditioned soul can ultimately go back to Godhead. Last paragraph, and we're done. The process of transcendental help by the Lord is described in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, Tesham Satata Yuktanam, etc. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yinamam Upiyanti Te. The Buddhi Yoga process of self-realization with intelligence transcendental to the mind, parentheses, devotional service, can alone elevate one from the conditioned state of material entanglement in the cosmic construction. That's the good news about all of this. This complicated machine, there's an escape place. The conditioned state of the living entity is like that of a person who is within the depths of a huge mechanical arrangement. The mental speculators can reach the point of Buddhi Yoga after many, many lifetimes of speculation. They may not. But the intelligent person who begins from the platform of intelligence above the mind makes rapid progress in self-realization. So there's the stairway and there's the elevator. Because the Buddhi Yoga process entails no fear of deterioration or retrogression at any time, it is the guaranteed path of self-realization as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2:40. Because 2:41 is the Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. No, excuse me, is the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ekeha Kuru Nandana. So 2:40 is... Do we have Bhagavad Gita? Huh? Could you get Bhagavad Gita? The mental speculators cannot understand that the two birds, Shvetashvatara Upanishad, and I think it's either Keno Upanishad or Katha Upanishad, two birds in a tree, one is jumping, enjoying the fruit, the other is the witness bird. They can't understand that presentation. The individual soul eats the fruit of the tree, while the other bird does not eat the fruit, but only observes the activities of the eating bird without attachment, the witness bird helps the fruit-eating bird perform fruitive activities. One who cannot understand this difference between the soul and the supersoul, or God and living entities, is certainly still in the entanglement of the cosmic machinery, and thus he must wait the time when he will be free from bondage. So, that besides the science of how this whole thing is put together, the creation, in a presentation that's quite scientific, and those that have a penchant for that kind of analysis will benefit. They'll be very happy hearing this kind of presentation. Aside from that, it's the goal, the purpose is how devotional service works, how the individual consciousness can connect with the Supreme Consciousness. And if that isn't done, then the material condition rules and controls the living entity in these various ways. So here's 240 Bhagavad Gita. You're right. Nehava Kramanashosti Patyavayu Navidyate. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Okay, so it's permanent. Devotional service, even if not completed, it's still permanent. And when you, so many lifetimes later, may take it up, you begin where you left off. That's unlike anything that's material. So if you want to build the universe, check in with Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And if you want to appreciate how wonderful is my Lord, how he creates this universe, it's just mind-boggling, read Srimad Bhagavatam. And as we said the other day, it's not that you can't go back to Godhead unless you've got all this figured out. You can go back to Godhead just by simply accepting how wonderful is my Lord. Like the cobbler that said, certainly I believe that Narayan was putting the elephant through the little opening in the needle. How wonderful is my Lord? Because he can put a whole banyan tree in it. Thousands of banyan trees in a little banyan tree seed pod, because there's so many seeds and so many banyan trees. If he can do that, he can. How wonderful is my Lord? So, how he does that, the Bhagavatam is describing, is the graduate study of that simple understanding. Any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. I have a question, like, is Balaram as Sesha who supports the universe? And if so, does spiritual world is a part of universe, and does he support that as well?
Spiritual world is not part of this universe. Spiritual world is beyond this universe. But the spiritual sky is we're in the spiritual sky right now, although it looks like Detroit or suburbs of Detroit, because it's resting in the spiritual sky. But the spiritual planets, they're also in the spiritual sky, but they're not touched by the material elements and this cosmic manifestation. Both are under the rule of the Supreme Lord, but so they have the same ruler, you can say the same kingdom, because they have the same ruler. But they're distinct. These, as categories of energy, they're distinct.
Is like Balaram as Sesha supporting the universe as well, or how is that work?
Sure. Sure. Your question is, how does that work?
I mean, it
works by his spiritual potency.
I understand that it's a Garbhodakshay Vishnu who supports the whole universe, so are they different or both the same?
Oh no, they're not both the same. Their functions are distinct.
But they're not the same.
Well, you can say the same and not the same. You want, you know, to achintya abheda abheda tattva. But commonly, the distinction is there because their functions.
I have another question, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
Regarding the reading Bhagavatam, now it seems that, I mean, if I try to read each verse with purpose as well, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm just curious that, can I just read verse by verse to verse? I mean, or just for curiosity's sake, or
I don't know if your curiosity will be satisfied, but yes, you can do that. I know people that have done that. But we won't understand it. We'll get a sense of the storyline, basically, but not an understanding of the Bhagavatam. You get a very simple, sketchy picture. Here's something that Prabhupada said about just reading the verses without the purports. Without the story, Prabhupada said, you won't understand the meaning. Here's the story. In Boston, there was a printing press. And the person that was in charge of the printing press came up with an idea and proposed it to Prabhupada that we could print one Bhagavad Gita, just the verses, fits in your pocket, and you can carry it around with you and from time to time just look at the verses and recite the verses. So he wanted permission from Prabhupada to print that. And Prabhupada said no, because you won't understand the meaning. Then he went on to say, the translations of Bhagavad Gita, verse-wise, are not so different from one another. But the commentary is where it's different. You know, manmana bhava mad bhakto, always think of me, and then the purport says, don't think of Krishna. That's where it differs. So the commentary must be there so people have proper understanding. With listening to one lecture recently, Prabhupada was saying there's a Mayavadi sannyasi, at least at the time, a very popular Mayavadi sannyasi that would speak from the Bhagavatam. He says, even Shankaracharya, he didn't touch. And the followers of Shankaracharya, except for the Chaturasloki verses, they didn't touch. But today, Kali Yuga has progressed. There's a Mayavadi sannyasi in Vrindavan, very popular, speaks in the Bhagavatam, and the conclusion of the Bhagavatam is Krishna doesn't exist. Very popular. Because he's highly educated, Prabhupada said he uses words in such a way people are mesmerized. And the message is Krishna doesn't exist. His interest is to kill Krishna and people go. Large numbers. In Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. Krishna doesn't exist. Something else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. This is regarding reading Bhagavatam. Like, should we always try to read Bhagavatam by ear
Sure. Prabhupada produced the books for that reason. It wasn't a trick. By being humble. I'm giving the answer that Prabhupada gave when someone said, how do we become sincere? And his answer was, by being sincere. And then he's followed by saying, everybody knows what sincerity is. We know what insincerity is, and we know what sincerity is, and be sincere. So similarly, be humble. Cultivate that. When you to put some, fill it out a bit, when you try to be humble, you'll learn a lot about what it means to be humble. Until you try to do something, you don't have, you, someone can explain till the cows come home, and you still don't get it. But when you try, then you get, you know, so... And a starting point of what it means to be humble is the spiritual conception of life. The material conception of life is being humble is pretense or cosmetic, show bottle. It's not substantial. And you know, I can give examples, but when there's a spiritual conception, it's not generated by material circumstances, it's not deterred by material circumstances, it stands. It's sat. It's substantial. The spiritual conception of humility is, who am I? I'm this tiny speck, infinitesimal spark of the Supreme. That's who I am, and what am I meant to do? I'm meant to serve the Supreme. That's the foundation of humility. So you're walking along the path of life, and some circumstances arise that say, wow, you did this. You stay in the spiritual conception of life. And, oh, you're that. You stay in the spiritual conception of life. Honor and dishonor are the same. They're material. It has nothing to do with me. I'm spirit soul. And then you can remain humble. Before Krishna, you're insignificant. And that doesn't change with honor or dishonor. You're insignificant. But the service is significant. So that's what I'm attached to. Serving with whatever love and devotion I can muster. That's significant. And that's the platform of humility. You cultivate that. Not just, you know, the affectation. The consciousness. And from the consciousness, the quality is there. And the behaviors that are of that quality are there. No one will understand that unless they become a devotee, unless they associate with devotees and practice devotional service, and it's a mystery. It's something that will never be in, you know, within someone's experience. Even they may, you know, stretch their mind and say, so it's not just a matter of accepting within the mind. It's a matter of being humble. From the soul to Krishna, before Krishna, insignificant, infinitesimal little speck. That's who I am, meant for Krishna's service. I'm ready. In that mood of one's insignificance, what does it amount to? It's insignificant. And the big picture of everything, insignificant. But Krishna is very kind. He'll accept that insignificance because he's loving. That's humility. And cultivate that. Yes.
Maharaj, I had two questions. One is about steadfastness. What exactly is steadfastness?
I'm
confused.
When people ask questions like that, that with that kind of emphasis, it's a little intimidating. Not the usual kind of answers that you give where you're just in the ballpark, but what is it exactly? Go ahead.
We hear that we follow the regulated principles, we have to do certain services, but I'm still struggling with a lot of situations because I'm always one foot in the spiritual services and activities and one foot in material activities. I don't want to give up my spiritual services. I want to do it. I don't feel that I'm surrendered.
Okay.
I mean, I have a lot of things I have to work on.
Okay, good. You're in the same boat as everybody else. Welcome on board.
But I really don't see that in others, Maharaj.
Oh. Okay. That's your humility. But it's there in all of us. Without exception, it's there in all of us. There's a mix. We're in the same boat. There's something and there's something. And there's a mix. So, what to do? Whether others have or don't have, what should you do? Be realistic in your evaluation, as you just expressed, and here's this and here's that. And I'd like more of this and less of that. But, you know, I'm not fully surrendered. So now what to do? I want to increase this. And I want to diminish that. So let me work on not just increasing, decreasing. Let me work on the basics, like sadhana. Hearing and chanting. If I can just do that with care and attention, then something's going to happen. I have faith. Something's going to happen. Purification will take place. Strength will come. Detachment from the rest. Let me turn my attention to that. You put the horse before the cart. That's sadhana, or bhajana kriya. That's the horse that pulls the cart. And what pulls the bhajana kriya is sadhu sangha. So let me carefully keep association of devotees, and in the association of devotees, bhajana kriya. And then the cart starts to move. Now that the cart is moving, what are some doable ways that I can, either qualitatively or quantitatively or both, increase this? At least maintain, but at some point I want to increase. So, qualitatively or quantitatively, increase. And what are some of the things that are superfluous and I certainly can do without? Did I do without? Something that's doable and sustainable, doable. And then do that. Increase, decrease. On the strength of spiritual strength, you can decrease something. Some things are just going to fall away, and some things you deliberately throw in the trash. And that way you cultivate Krishna consciousness.
I mean, what is there a measure? Like, okay, it's time that, you know, it's no longer dovetailing. I have to change or channelize my.
When it's sustainable, then it's good to get rid of it. Say it the other way. Unrealistic, unsustainable, get rid of something, and then you go back and you pick it up again, you feel discouraged. So, still, so always there should be a desire to progress. And even the desire to progress will help you progress and make the steps of progress incremental, that which you can sustain. Like Prabhupada's example about chanting. When you increase your rounds, don't go back. So make the number of rounds that you increase, whatever, you know, from whatever someone's beginning, something you can do every day. And then do it every day. When you make the increase, don't go back. Do it every day. That's best approach. And do those things that you do with feeling. Work on that. And that can be up and down, variable, unsteady. But cultivate it, and then it'll grow. So your question was, to what extent, or where is the line for dovetailing? The line keeps moving as you become more capable. Not only one person to another person, but in one's own life. Capability may increase. Capability may decrease. Because I may be the sine curve is going down. There's certain things that I'm just not going to compromise on, but some things, because I'm just very determined. Like that was your first question. Just very determined. That's it. Let's say, vegetarian. That's a line I'm not going to cross. Or whatever are the other things. There's a line I'm not going to cross. The four regular principles I'm not going to. So then, I'm not going to cross. Now there are some other things that. So you have to know your own capacity, and there you may redefine from time to time what I'm capable of, and you're even in if it's one of those things, one becomes weakened due to some circumstance, through the movements of time. I'm still going to keep as a goal, I want to increase, but I may calibrate what I can dovetail and what I won't dovetail, because it's just unacceptable, and I'm firm. So that may vary from time to time, but I'm always wishing to make some increase. That's otherwise there's no life. Or say it the other way, that's life. Another way of saying the same thing, Prabhupada said, we're either progressing or regressing. There's no question of remaining stationary or stagnation. Spiritual life is dynamic. Either progressing or regressing. And even if there's some setback and something becomes reduced, that's circumstantial, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. That my effort always be to, according to my capacity, strive to serve Krishna and make Krishna give me greater strength so my capacity increases. When that sincerity is there, that's what will happen. Even there may be some temporary setback, it'll be restored. Chipram bhavati dharmatma. Krishna will correct the situation quickly. Quickly doesn't mean according to our time frame, it's according to Krishna's time frame. Krishna, hurry up. What's wrong with you? Okay? We're done. That takes care of both of them. Okay. Yes.
About Krishna's time frame.
Here comes the microphone.
I was wondering in regard in yep. regards to Krishna's time frame.
Fix it. Yes?
The time when the living entities are absorbed back into Vishnu.
Yeah.
What purpose does that serve?
Get a little rest.
And we're not conscious during those times. Our consciousness.
The consciousness is always there with the soul. It's just dormant.
The life air, from what you were explaining,
yes.
isn't there for us.
That's correct. Bodies aren't there. That's just the soul is in an anesthetized state. So there's anesthesia when you have a body, and there's anesthesia when you don't have a body. But it's the consciousness is anesthetized.
So then we can understand that in our unpure state, we're incapable of experiencing our consciousness without a body.
Not exactly. If Krishna wanted, he can awaken that living entity even without a body. But that's not what he does.
I was trying to understand when you said total consciousness is that of gigantic root, Virata root consciousness, and in an individual, because we come in contact with the material atmosphere, it's exhibited through a false ego.
Yes.
And then the consciousness is performed through the air of life. So I was trying to understand the role of pranayama here, if we try to, you know, what can it help?
Well, it's health related, yes. Prabhupada didn't instruct us to do pranayama. That's a starting point. He instructed us to chant Hare Krishna. We do our breathing when we're chanting Hare Krishna. That's our pranayama. It's not the mechanical type, but it's acting on consciousness directly, like this example of the indirect and the direct, the Bodhi Yoga directly. It acts directly. But supposing somebody doesn't have faith in that, or their faith is not so strong for a variety of reasons, including the false ego reason you mentioned, then they may do whatever they may do because of that. And one of those is they may do pranayama, which is also a science, drilling the life airs to help get the life airs more balanced so that you can surrender to Krishna. Or just surrender to Krishna. So, I'm not making a statement that says, don't do pranayama. I'm not making a statement that says, do pranayama. It has its place for those that have a particular faith or perhaps a particular need. But it's not something our founder Acharya gave for all of us to do. He gave Bhagavad Dharma for us to do. Is that? Okay. Back here? Here comes the microphone. You gotta hit the button at the bottom.
Just like, we come this phrase, like, yoga, like, is it same as yoga?
It's the same, but it's the emphasis is different. Bhakti yoga is the broader term. Bodhi yoga is bhakti yoga, where there's emphasis on the intelligence driving the machine. And the intelligence that's given directly by Krishna because one is doing these nice things that we were speaking of before. Sincerely trying one's earnest best to always serve Krishna. Tesam satata yuktanam.
So like Jnana Yoga is something like ascending and Buddhi Yoga is something
like ascending? Jnana Yoga is quite different than Buddhi Yoga. Jnana Yoga is based on speculation. But this is the dovetail. My speculation is on what is supreme. Buddhi Yoga is not speculation on what is supreme. It's engaging in devotional service, and Krishna gives spiritual intelligence how to get to him, and one does that. That's Buddhi Yoga. Is that right?
My question is related to yesterday's class. Maharaj, you mentioned that there is a place in South India where there is a pillar where Lord Narasimhadev appeared, and you mentioned that there have been so much of worship and prayer happening at that place. It has the same spiritual potency.
I just repeated Prabhupada, yes.
So the question that I have is, how do we understand, the same pastime happened in Indra's planet and it happened here also? How do I understand this?
I don't know how you understand it. You should tell us. Here's what Prabhupada said. It's none different. It has the same spiritual potency because of the bhakti that's been performed there for generations and centuries and eons. Let me ask you answer your question in a different way by asking a question. Mothers know which blood-curdling cry is their child. It all sounds the same to me. I watched it once in Gita Nagari. Husband was seated over here, the wife was seated over there, and the child was walking around. It was down. The children were with somebody supervising, and one child cried. I saw both the husband and wife stand up, and immediately went to go, because out of all the people in the room, they knew that's our child. Okay. Where were we? What was the question again?
You asked him a question to answer his question.
Oh yeah, okay. When Srila Prabhupada incorporated ISKCON in New York, one of the requirements of the state of New York was state the purposes of the organization. So the seven purposes of ISKCON. One of those purposes was to establish places of pastime of Krishna. Now, how do you do that? Establish. Krishna comes, that's how you do it. Krishna comes and he performs pastimes. And that establishes a place of... So how can ISKCON establish places of Krishna's pastimes? You establish a deity and you worship the deity, and that establishes a place of Krishna's pastimes. You have kirtan, you have sangha, you have nectar devotion, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam class, and hearing and discussing topics about Krishna. That's what's done in the spiritual world. Establish places of Krishna's pastimes. In the same way, something else? Okay.
Thank you for the class, Maharaj.
Is the microphone on?
Yes, Maharaj, it's on.
There's some problem with the battery.
You have to wiggle the battery.
It doesn't get fixed, so it just
Okay.
Okay.
Go right ahead without the microphone.
My question was, what I understood from the lecture was, before even the creation was completely put into place, Lord Brahma was there and the demigods were there.
No. Brahma hasn't appeared yet. And I'll read the verse again. Not in the verse. It's in the purport where well, I'll have to find it another time rather than delaying here. But let me just there's a in chapter 5, it's speaking, the demigods are speaking. In this section, after they've spoken, which sounds like they exist, the Virat Rupa appears, and the living entities are lying down, along with Garbhadakshay Vishnu, in this 1,000 celestial year period before the universe is created, before, which happens after Brahma is created. The Brahma is a post, and there is no one occupying the post because there's no creation yet. So, question: who spoke in chapter 5? Because they haven't been created yet. There's just these elements. So, the only answer that I can think of is in the language of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in Sri Brahma Samhita, he uses this language, the prototype Brahma. We know what a prototype is. Bhaktisiddhanta used language encyclopedia-like. So, where do we find a prototype Brahma? Before creation. Because there's Brahmas within each of the universes. Before there's even universes where there's Brahmas, there's the prototype Brahma, from which the Brahmas are manufactured, from the prototype, the model. And that's Bhaktisiddhanta, so I don't have the scriptural reference to say this is the situation. In chapter 5, those demigods are prototype demigods from which there's so many other demigods. In fact, the demigods with each day of Brahma, these the chief demigods, it's a post, and then different persons occupy the post. When each Manu comes on, he sets up a whole new administration. Someone else becomes Indra, someone else becomes this one, that one. It's a post occupied by a person who is established by Manu. So before there's the post, what existed? There's this prototype, or there is this in the Virat Rup, before the universe is filled up and filled out, there's the subtle. And even before the subtle, there's these demigods. So what's that? The Lord creates. And the only answer that I can offer, and I can't confirm it with scripture, so I'm reluctant, but it's following Bhakti Siddhanta's, by inference, following Bhakti Siddhanta's message, they're prototypes. There's the capacity to do this service, so the capacity has to be personified. So in the spiritual realm, going back to the second canto, chapter 9, where before there's a creation, Brahma is meditating. And in his perfection of meditation, the spiritual world becomes visible, not the material world. And so he enters into that spiritual realm, and seated around the Supreme Lord are, it mentions by numbers, you know, the 9, the 16, the 5, and then in the purport, Prabhupada identifies, these are the personified prototypes, personified forms of the various elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, personified before there's the manifestation of them, they're personified. So something in that, before the manifestation comes here, there's something.
There's some representation of that in the spiritual world.
Yes. And now, so in the process of creation, that's something that we know for sure, scripturally, from chapter 9 of second canto. Now, in this process of creation, the spiritual world is there, for sure, and the Lord is desiring the living entities have a chance to again rectify their consciousness, so he starts doing some things with his own energies. He's not relying on something outside of himself, he's just manipulating his energies how he likes for that purpose. And the elements separate out, and the controlling deities also separate out or are manifest. So it's not exactly in the spiritual world as what Brahma saw, but it's not exactly as, you know, there's a sun god Vivaswan, and it's a prototype. Something like that is the best that I can do.
I had one more question.
Sure.
This was with respect.
Here comes the microphone. Look at that.
This was with respect to the prayer.
Which prayer?
General prayer when, like, the demigods prayed and they got a response.
Yeah.
So, like, as devotees, when we pray and either we don't seem like there's a response or there's no kind of full resolution, then what should we check in so that we stay the course on our enthusiasm?
Your convictions. Because Krishna is not our order supplier. We put in a requisition slip and he's obliged. He's got a big warehouse. And he supplies, because that's his job, right? That's karma mimamsa. It's atheistic philosophy that says, I do, he's supposed to supply. It can be a supplier or not a supplier. His function is he just supplies. If there is, he just is a supplier. And if there isn't, it doesn't matter. I just do my prayers and... So the adjustment is, he's a person, and he knows that we're contaminated, and he knows how to help us become uncontaminated better than we do. He knows what our necessities are better than we do. So let me place my trust in that. He's loving, he's omniscient, he's benevolent, and if it doesn't come this way at this moment, that's quite okay. Whatever he wants. Imagine that you were a perfect person for for a moment. And your son comes and he wants something. You're my perfect person, beloved father. I want something. And it may not come. And your son may wonder, well, what's wrong with you? You're a perfect person, and I want. You're the order supply. You're supposed to supply what I want. That's your job. But that's not the only job that a perfect father has. It's to elevate the consciousness of that imperfect dependent.
Does this apply even to aspects of spiritual?
Sure, whatever. A, B, C. And X, Y, and Z. Beginning to end. In order for our spiritual necessities to be factually realized, if it was just, you know, mechanical, snap my fingers and boom, we would take it cheaply. But it's not cheap. There's something. So what you can do is look to see what it is that I'm holding on to. What is it that's my limitation, imperfection, impurity. So I can pray for purity. But do I really mean it? So you look at those things. Look for improvement within rather than, you know, what's going on in this relationship with Krishna, who's not jumping when I say jump. Okay, well then there, I think. You have something?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Last question.
Maharaj, you mentioned, I have a question about Virat Roop.
Like, Virat Roop.
Is that a subset of universal form that Krishna showed Arjuna?
You know, that's another... I was attending a class once when Satsarup Maharaj was asked this question. There's a Virat Roop spoken of in the second canto, chapter 1, as there's one that's being described here in chapter 6. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the universal form apparently in a different way. How to understand the difference? And his answer was, he just repeated what Krishna said in chapter 11, and he repeated what's described by Shukadeva Goswami in second canto. He didn't analyze it further. There's certainly both a Virat Roop, so, you know, which is the subset of the other one? I don't know. There are different ways of seeing the same thing, different ways of describing the same thing. It's the same thing. Different ways of seeing and describing the same thing. Virat Roop. The form of the universe. To be continued. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.